This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. While college athletics are on hold right now because of the coronavirus pandemic, some major decisions are still looming when it comes to paying athletes for their name, image, and likeness. And some states are all for it. Others, like New Jersey and New York, are strongly considering the possibilities. Enter Student Player, a centralized crowdfunding platform where fans can contribute today towards sponsoring NCAA student athletes. The mission of Student Player is twofold. First, give student athletes the ability to focus on their education and the sport they love. And second, democratize the recruitment process by empowering fans and alumni in the formation of development of college sports teams. My guest on Sports Jam is the founder of Student Player and thestudentplayer.com, Zach Siegel, who joins us from his home in Denver, Colorado. Zach, thanks for joining us today on Sports Jam.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
This is an extremely hot topic. You know, we talk about it in my sports broadcasting classes all the time. Should student athletes be paid? Obviously, you know your take on this because you felt that studentplayer.com needed to be created. Tell us about the origins of studentplayer.com.
Sure. So obviously you can infer that my take on this is that yes, student athletes should have the ability to get paid by benefiting from their name, image, and likeness. And that stemmed back to when I went to college. I attended Brown University and played on the men's ultimate frisbee team, which is a club sport and not an NCAA recognized activity. So as a club sport player, I was free to do whatever I wanted in terms of getting sponsorship deals, holding clinics, posting ads, being a part of a commercial. Any form of compensation related to my name, image, and likeness was permitted. Whether I got any is a different question altogether. But the fact is that I could have if I was given the chance. Whereas friends on the swim team or the tennis team, soccer, basketball, football, any NCAA recognized sports had different rights than I did. And that never made sense to me. So that was the inspiration for Student Player and my initial foray into the world of name, image, and likeness.
So the crux of this for a lot of people is, where do you draw the line as far as what sports and what, you know, type of athlete should be paid? Should it just be the football teams that bring in the most money or the basketball teams? You're talking about ultimate sports there that aren't necessarily big sports, but we're talking about maybe some of the other sports like soccer that might not bring in as much money to the school. What have you learned so far about how athletes feel about being in maybe those sports that don't generate the most money for schools?
I think the important thing here is to remember that student athletes, and this is both according to my belief as well as the NCAA's, are students first. So to me, the important thing is not that everyone get compensated equally or that decisions be made on how much revenue a sport generates, but that every student has an equal opportunity to benefit from their name, image, and likeness. Now, equal opportunity does not mean equal dollars. So there are going to be some basketball players and football players who make more than others on the tennis or soccer team. But conversely, there may be a soccer player with a large social media following who makes more from their name, image, and likeness than a football player on the championship team. So it'll be exciting to see what happens, how it gets divided amongst players on revenue-generating sports and non-revenue-generating sports. But to me, the most important thing is that everyone have the same equal opportunity.
Zach, get us caught up on where the laws are. And as we head into a new season, which is really unpredictable right now with the coronavirus outbreak, but where do we stand right now as far as the law, as far as this image and likeness is concerned?
Colorado and California have passed laws that take effect January 1st, 2023, that essentially create an open market system for student athletes to be able to benefit from their name, image, and likeness. And that's very important, but perhaps not as important as Florida's presumptive law. And I say presumptive because the governor has yet signed it, even though he has indicated his support for it on numerous occasions. That bill has passed through Florida's Senate and House and is only awaiting his signature before it becomes law. What's especially interesting about that law is that it takes effect July 1st, 2021. So that means that an athlete who is starting school in the fall of 2021 in Florida will be able to benefit from their name, image, and likeness and go out and get sponsorship deals. Now, if Florida is the only state to allow their athletes to get sponsorship deals, you can imagine that the top prospects are basically going to limit their search to Florida schools. That would be a very unbalanced athletic season for the NCAA and may not be reparable for many years to come. So while the NCAA continues to request that Congress enact a standard that's more favorable or along the terms that they want with guardrails and other restrictions, time is running out, because if that standard is not in place within the next 5 or 6 months, you can imagine a very unfair season starting in 2021.
So before we get into the details of studentplayer.com, your site, New York and New Jersey very much discussing this right now, right?
That's right. So New York and New Jersey also have this on their radar screen. Of course, the coronavirus has become top of mind for everyone. But New York had an interesting proposal where student athletes would also benefit not just from their name, image, and likeness, but from revenue generated by the schools and by the ticket sales. That would go even further than the laws in Colorado and California and the presumptive law in Florida. So it's, in my view, that it would behoove the NCAA to act quickly and nationalize a standard like Florida, because what New York and New Jersey are talking about, I think, is even further away from what their desired endpoint would be.
Enter studentplayer.com into the discussion. Take us through what the site is all about and how people can get involved.
So we were worried that given these open market laws, a few wealthy boosters or corporations would essentially control recruiting by dictating where they would sponsor athletes at which schools. And that did not seem very appealing to us. So we created a centralized crowdfunding platform where every fan can have a voice in the process by contributing whatever they feel comfortable contributing towards a given school, team, and in some cases, position. So if you're a fan of Syracuse, but not a fan of your current point guard, you can contribute $5, $10, $100 through studentplayer.com and allocate that towards the starting point guard at Syracuse in the following year. Now, as someone making the contribution, you don't know who that point guard will end up being, but you do know that everyone considering where to attend college next year will go to studentplayer.com and look at the comparative funding totals for players and positions at different universities. So every fan contribution will count, will get noticed if it's done through a central platform like studentplayer.com.
By taking a look at some of the stats that you already have on studentplayer.com, I noticed that the big schools are getting the most money right now. You have Alabama and Penn State and Clemson and Ohio State all within the top five, top six or seven. If you're playing devil's advocate, does that mean the rich keep getting richer?
I think that, you know, the initial contributions have sort of led to that sort of conclusion, but I don't know if that's what it's going to end up being. The schools that benefit most from this will depend on a few factors. It's not past performance necessarily, but the size and the intensity of the fan base is likely to have the biggest effect. The way the schools themselves handle name, image, likeness will also play a role. And the way the state legislatures of the schools advocate for this will also encourage students to attend. So I think we'll see some expected results. There may be some existing big player schools that continue to have a successful team and rally their fan base around this. But I can imagine some schools that historically have not done very well with a very intense fan base stepping up and showing prospective athletes that they should think twice before they go to one of the traditional power schools and take a look at theirs.
So listeners may be saying, how did Zach Siegel get to have this site where he actually is getting people to contribute to NCAA athletes? How did it happen? And why is it you?
When California, this has been a subject that's been on my mind for years since I was in college. And when California passed the Fair Pay Play Act in October, it just set off a light bulb. And immediately, it was an aha moment that this is happening. It's inevitable. There's no way to exclude California schools from the league as the NCAA was threatening to do. And so I started thinking, what's the best way to do this that gets the fans involved, gets them engaged, and also provides compensation opportunities to the athletes in a quick and easy manner so that they can still have time to be students and focus on their studies. And it was that combination of factors, and I think having attended law school, being able to read the California law and feel comfortable with what it said and meant, you know, gave me the confidence to move forward and get the site up and running.
So what's been the response from the NCAA, from various schools that you're getting, and from players, maybe even parents?
The players and parents are big fans of this because we provide transparency. We make it easy, simple. It's just an easy way to know what sponsorship opportunities will come with being at different schools. So we've gotten overwhelmingly positive reactions from the players, the parents, and the fans. We've gotten very little reactions from officials at schools and the NCAA. And I think that's not surprising because they are sort of waiting until the dust settles completely before issuing, you know, their opinion, different platforms and opportunities. We are not set out to be in opposition to the NCAA or to schools. You know, we imagine working with them, providing transparency, reporting all of the sponsorship deals, complying with their rules and state laws. So I am looking forward to a long and fruitful partnership with the NCAA and all of the schools, but I think they're sort of holding back until they know exactly what the laws and their rules say before endorsing one platform over another sponsorship structure.
You're listening to Sports Jam. My guest is the founder of Student Player, Zach Siegel, who is joining us from his home in Denver, Colorado. Let's find out more about this unique website and Zach Siegel himself. Zach, when it comes to 2023 was one of the dates you threw out. Is Zach Siegel in this for the long run?
Yes, we are here to stay. I think that this is going to be something that year after year, a site that fans engage with, that athletes look at, that college administrators look at. This will be something that every prospect looks at before they make a decision of where they go to school. It's just like every prospect looks at the locker room and facility that a school has. They're also going to want to know what sponsorship opportunities are available. I think college sports is here to stay. It's been under some threat lately by things like the G League, where a lot of top basketball recruits are choosing to forego college and go to the G League where they can earn a salary. But once the NIL laws are in place and those student athletes can get compensated and go to college, I expect that that's what they will do. So we are in it for the long run. This is a subject that I'm passionate about. I am happy to be a part of it and the first company to link student athletes with sponsorships.
As you've been going through this process, I'm sure there have been things that have made you raise your eyebrows about college athletics. Can you tell us some of them?
Sure. It's been upsetting to me to see the contradiction between student athletes being perceived as students first, but not having the same rights as other students. And to me, it's a very simple issue, you know, and there's been lots of talk of guardrails. And I suppose that's what causes my eyebrows to raise a little bit. It's very simple. We just need to treat the student athletes like students. So if there's a guardrail that's needed, it should be needed for the entire student body, not just the student athletes. And if that's not the case, then we don't need the guardrail. That's my perception. And I think that the issue gets overcomplicated in a way that can sometimes be upsetting to me, but I'm hopeful that at the end of the day, we'll end up with a result where all students are treated equally.
I think, you know, one of the issues that always seems to come up, I was speaking with Pat Cavanaugh, who used to play point guard for Pitt. He was a two-time captain for the Pitt University basketball team. He's now the founder and CEO of Ready Nutrition in Wexford, Pennsylvania. And I asked him, you know, do you feel athletes should be paid? And he said, yes, I do. And when it comes to the perceptions of people, including college students who think that athletes always get the benefit of the doubt and they get a free education, so why do they need to be paid? But he brought up the whole point, and we've heard it time and time again, that various athletes just don't have money to even have a good meal or take out a friend to dinner because they are getting the scholarship doesn't mean they have money to do the everyday things that a college student needs to do.
That's right. And I think they're unfairly restricted from monetizing their brand. And I understand the perspective that their opportunities are going to be greater than the majority of students. But that's the case in life. You know, some people have these special talents and skills that we all love watching. And we tune in to watch the athletic competitions because of the talents that these individuals have. And it is their right to go out and monetize that just the way any other student can. So I agree with Pat that they should be able to get compensated. They're often in situations where they could really use the money. It would make a material difference in their life. And the odds of going pro are about 1%. And then you add on top of that the chance of injury. So this, for many of them, is their opportunity to monetize their brand that comes with having these special athletic talents.
Can you take us into a conversation maybe you've had with a student athlete, maybe one of note that really has given you some, you know, inside information and some thoughtful, you know, consideration on how this whole studentplayer.com could help he or she?
Sure. I won't give names, but, you know, I'll give you sort of two sides of the coin. You know, one was concerned that athletes should play for the love of the game and not be concerned with the compensation. So that was a student athlete that I spoke with who was not in favor of the new nil laws. And we had a productive conversation, and ultimately it came down to the fact that you can both love the game and get compensated, and that's okay. You know, I love what I'm doing for work, but also rely on it for compensation, and I imagine the same would be true for you in your career. The other side is, you know, I spoke with some athletes who were not necessarily the stars on their team, but were hilarious and had large social media followings and would have loved the opportunity while they were in college to monetize that. So they missed out on an opportunity and feel like these laws will stop that from happening to students in the future.
It's interesting that we're talking about likeness and image when it comes to athletes, when one of the most popular shows on television right now happens to be The Last Dance, featuring Michael Jordan, and they obviously talk about his shoes and how he basically had a whole new revolution when it came to fashion in the NBA and beyond.
It's the power of his brand that made that happen.
So you can imagine that some of these athletes will be making choices about products and be able to, you know, once it becomes a situation where their likeness could be used, this could open up more opportunities for brands and athletic gear and shoes, right? Would that be would that be a correct statement?
Absolutely. And we're talking sort of about basketball and football and the big nationally televised stars. But I think this could happen across the board. You know, you can imagine a gymnast, let's say an Alabama gymnast with a following locally, having their own line of performance gymnastics wear that's sold at local studios. And that can be multiplied across the country for every sport and every athlete. So I think we're going to see lots of new and exciting micro brands be developed from this, both for in the apparel world and in other products as well.
Your site already has generated well over $100,000. What would be the figure that you would say you expect when this all shakes out?
So the top 50 revenue generating sports programs in 2018, and these are figures that are available on USA Today, generated an average about $29 to $30 million in contributions a year, and that's per school. So I don't know if we'll get that much per school, but I expect that student player will receive millions of dollars of compensation, and that the top athletes at the top programs can expect to receive sponsorship offers in the vicinity of whatever the coach is paid, essentially. So I can imagine multi-million dollar sponsorship offers through studentplayer.com for some of the top basketball and football players at many different schools.
Zach, does it ever crop into your mind that there could be some sort of illegal activities eventually when money, I mean, we hear about it right now with, you know, NCAA regulations of money changing hands between, you know, players and athletes and, you know, and families and schools. Do you see how that can all be regulated?
Well, I think that our site and clear open market laws are going to cut down on the historic, you know, under the table nature of this. If it's legal and transparent and on studentplayer.com, then there's no incentive to do things improperly, since you could accomplish the same goals legally and in a manner that is transparent to all the stakeholders.
New York University School of Law. Why was law important to you?
Well, as a starting point, I have three older siblings who went to law school as well. So there was always this feeling growing up, if I didn't go to law school at our family dinners, I would be bringing a knife to a gunfight, essentially. So I needed to arm myself to hold my own at family arguments. So that was the first thing. But it's always fascinated me. I always want to feel comfortable operating within our legal system, understanding what's permitted, what's not. And quite frankly, when I don't practice as a lawyer, so I do need to know when to call up lawyers for more help. And it's just been immensely helpful in whatever I'm doing, especially this venture, as it's so dependent on state laws and when/if the federal government ultimately puts forth a federal standard.
Zach, Sports Jam is a WBGO News production, and WBGO is considered the world's greatest jazz station. And you went to high school in Montreal at St. George's, so I'm sure there's people listening right now in Montreal that know your high school well. You played just about every sport possible there, tennis, volleyball, ultimate. Take us back to those days.
That was a lot of fun. You know, growing up in Montreal as a kid was wonderful. It was a very safe and accessible city. And I had parents who gave me lots of latitude. So that I can't say enough good things. And the Jazz Fest especially was always a fun time. Playing sports at a school where there's 60 kids in a grade and half of them are women is fun, because you could essentially be on whatever team you wanted to. I had no chance of playing D1 tennis, volleyball, or any sport. But really enjoyed all of the athletics that I participated in.
You mentioned you grew up in Montreal. Were you born in Canada?
I was born in New York. So it was, I've been on the Northeast my entire life and sort of split, well, until now, actually, when I'm in Denver, but split between New York and Montreal for my childhood.
And how did you get to Montreal from being born in New York?
My parents were actually born in Montreal, and they moved to New York where I was born. And when my mom got remarried, it was to someone who she had met in Montreal. So we decided to move back.
Did they ever make you a hockey fan?
Absolutely. I have to try my hardest not to use hockey references when talking to American sports fans. Not that there's no hockey here, but it's just not nearly as popular as basketball or football. So whenever... My first thought is always about hockey, but I have to sort of control that urge.
Believe it or not, two of the most recent guests on Sports Jam were born in Montreal. That's why I asked you, would you have made the trifecta there, or the, should we say, the hat trick on Sports Jam? But you were born in New York. You played ultimate in college. You talked about it when you went to college and you were there at Brown University. First of all, what a great university to be involved with. How fun was that?
It was wonderful. You know, it was really a great group, a great team. I learned a lot. It was fun. It was good exercise. Spending 4 years at Brown was amazing. Being able to play a club sport that I really enjoyed was also fun. And I have nothing but phenomenal things to say about the whole experience.
We had talked about this before we started. When I looked up more about Ultimate, it was founded in 1968 in Maplewood, New Jersey. And you didn't know that either, did you?
No, that was news to me. It was first made exposed to me by my computer science teacher, oddly enough, in high school, who he played on the Canadian men's national team. So he was doing his best to popularize the sport at the high school level. And that's where I first got into it. But I had no idea that its roots were in New Jersey. It's sort of a cross. It's very similar to soccer. It's kind of a cross between soccer and football in that the goal is to get the disc to the end zone on the other side. And you do so by passing it from one player to another. And you can't run with the disc. You just have to throw it. So if it drops, the other team gets to pick it up and go to the other end zone. So it's almost like a more fluid version of football that combines a lot of the same skills and technique as soccer, where you're essentially throwing the disc to a spot and hoping your teammate can run and get to it before the opposing team.
Well, a lot of teams are hoping that studentplayer.com works out well so that their players maybe get a chance of getting compensated and can make the right choices. What will be some of the benchmarks that you would say, Zach, as we wrap up this edition of Sports Jam, that we should be looking out to know where the whole scenario is regarding students and likeness and images and students getting paid properly?
I think the benchmarks to look out for are transparency. And if you're a fan of a given college or a given team, the thing to look out for is your rival having lots more contributions than your team. That's what's going to make the difference, I think, for some players. There's going to be many who pick schools based on a variety of factors. But like you mentioned earlier, how Pat said that some athletes really could benefit from the monetary compensation, I think there's going to be a set of athletes that essentially prioritize sponsorship opportunities when picking where to go to school. So that's going to be permissible given the laws. So I think the thing to watch out for is that it's all done in an open and transparent manner.
On your website, you say there are more than 500,000 student athletes in the U.S. We plan to sponsor them all. Would that be the ultimate goal for Zach Siegel?
That is our goal. We think that every student athlete should have the opportunity to benefit from their name, image, and likeness. Doesn't have to be in the same dollar amount, but we want to be able to offer everyone something and expect to do so.
So last question would be, what has been the toughest question that you faced so far in this journey?
Oh, that's a good one. I'm not going to get meta and say that question that you just asked. I'll come up with a real example. I think the toughest question always deals with integrating this into the NCAA's framework, which is something we're determined to do. It's a difficult task because, as you and your listener may be aware, this whole shift was not the NCAA's idea. It was sort of forced upon everyone by California and then subsequently Colorado, Florida, New York, New Jersey, and all of the 34 states that have advanced legislation on the issue. So reconciling this with this change with a system and administration that was not the driving force behind the change is probably the biggest challenge that we face moving forward.
Zach Siegel, the founder of Student Player. You can check out the website at studentplayer.com. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and we wish you a lot of success.
Thank you. I appreciate the time and loved being on the show.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the podcasts by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts and on iTunes. Until our next Sports Jam session, I hope to see you soon at the game.